All right, so what I want to share with you, for me, is especially meaningful because, unfortunately, in the yeshiva that I was in, I came away with a kind of negative attitude towards the teachings of Rav Kook. And so even though I teach Rav Kook, I didn't always teach Rav Kook. In fact, I didn't always even respect Rav Kook. And then I somehow found myself marrying a woman that was really into Rav Kook. And she knew that I was really not into Rav Kook. And it was a bit of a tension in our relationship, but she figured she'd go ahead with the marriage anyways. So I inherited shelves and shelves of the writings of Rav Kook. Yeah, it's around. And so I inherited all these books. And for 5 years of our marriage, we never talked about Rav Kook. Then one day, my wife came back from a class, and she said, "I just heard the most amazing class on something from Rav Kook." And I went, "Oh." And she said, "I mean, we've been married 5 years now. Do you think you'd be open if I could get a recording of that class to listen to it? Because I think it would really, I think you'd really appreciate it." So I said, okay. So she got me the recording of this class, and it was this particular source here, these sources here. And I was absolutely blown away. And since then, I was hooked on Rav Kook. And the reason why I was absolutely blown away is because what Rav Kook is going to share here is a philosophical translation of the Arizal's teachings regarding what's called Tzimtzum. And for years I had studied the writings of the Arizal and very familiar of the kind of, so to speak, the mystical flow chart. And it never meant anything philosophical or psychological to me. It just seemed very mystical. It seemed like some kind of physics, spiritual metaphysics. And this piece, Rav Kook really courageously cracks it open and gives the pshat, literally the simple pshat of what the Arizal was actually revealing. So Rav Kook takes it to the next level and brings it down even more for us. So let me tell you a little bit about the Tzimtzum. The Arizal explains that in the beginning, all of existence was filled with Or Ein Sof, with an endless light. And but when Hashem wanted to create you and me and the diversity of the universe, he caused a tzimtzum. He caused a withdrawal of his endless light from the center, creating a spherical vacuum, which is referred to as a chalal panui, a void. And then the Arizal describes that the Ein Sof, the endless one, condenses his endless light into a thin ray and projects that thin ray into the void, right? Now, in the void were born vessels which are very different than light. Light is expansive and unlimited, where the vessels are limited. When this thin ray of endless light enters into the vessels, they explode, which is referred to in Kabbalistic terminology as Shvirat HaKelim, the breaking of the vessels. And when the vessels break, the universe goes into a state called Tohu, which means chaos. And then the rest of the story is about fixing these broken vessels and gathering together the sparks of the endless light that's intermersed and intermingled in this chaos, to get to a world of tikkun, to get to a world of a repaired, fixed world. And there's so much more. I've just shared the most abridged version of what we need to know for this. Rav Nachman of Breslov says that the secret of Tzimtzum is the secret of everything in our lives. And if we could understand the secret of Tzimtzum, then we would have the secret to everything in our lives. So what Rav Kook is about to do, without mentioning anything about light, Tzimtzum, withdrawal, Shvira, he doesn't use any Kabbalistic terminology in any of these pieces, although Rav Kook does use sometimes, rarely, but sometimes uses some Kabbalistic terminology. Here you wouldn't know it, unless somebody shared it with you. So, with that, now the question is, what is the Arizal talking about? So there's different opinions of what that Tzimtzum actually meant. Did it mean concealment? Did it mean withdrawal? The Arizal, I forgot one of the most important punchline. The Arizal ends off this story with a paradoxical statement that although the light surrounds the void, it continues to fill the void, right? Which is a paradox. If the light surrounds the void, then there's a void. And if the light fills the void, then it doesn't surround the void. But the Arizal is not a philosopher. He is basically sharing with you a description of an experience of truth. An experience of truth doesn't always fit into the neat packaging of our logical minds. Okay? So, let's begin. Two values of perfection. Now, I decided not to bring the Hebrew because the ideas are hard enough as it is, so to do the Hebrew and translate it, I'd rather just focus on the ideas. If you'd like to get the Hebrew text of this, I'll be happy to send it to you. So it's called Shnei Archei Shleimut. Two values or two kinds or two types of Shleimut. Now, always the problem with learning Torah in English is you are suffering the limitation of translation. And translation already is an interpretation. So that's why you really need to know Hebrew to truly master Torah, so that you're not a victim of someone's translation, which is always accompanied with some element of interpretation. So here I have to tell you that the word shleimut has a number of English translations that we could pick. One would be perfection, shleimut. Another would be completeness. Another would be wholeness, whole. Something that shleim is whole. And so I couldn't put all these, and I, by the way, translated this. I couldn't put all those together, so I used the word perfection. We understand, yeah. No, there's not much difference at all. I'm just telling you different English words that you could have used. All right. We understand in the absolute divine perfection. Oh, by the way, shouldn't have said perfections. There was an imperfection in my. In the divine perfection, two values or two types of perfection. One value of perfection or wholeness, because of its greatness and completeness, has no relationship to any increment. However, if there was not a possibility of increment, this itself would be a deficiency. Because the perfection which progresses and increases consistently has an extra transcendental pleasure, a certain height that we yearn for, to grow from power to power. And therefore, the divine perfection could not miss this advantage of increment. Therefore, there is to divinity the ability to create a no-end actualization of worlds that continues in its full value and ascends, and therefore the divine soul to existence that gives it life. Is this consistent power to ascend? This is its divine foundation that calls it to actualize and improve. To the extent the science progresses and establishes itself on the principle of evolution, It progresses and comes closer to the clearest divine light, the highest vision. Well, that last line was a real surprise for most people. Rav Kook is saying that evolution is the closest scientific description of what Torah believes in. Right? Most people find a need to argue with evolution, seeing it as the arch enemy of Judaism. Rav Kook actually sees evolution as the closest scientific description that comes the closest to the way we actually see reality. Right? And we'll have to talk about that. But let's first deal with what he's actually saying over here. He's saying that there's two values of perfection. And another moment of imperfection. I forgot my pen. Happens to be right here. All right? And we need El Shmate. Is there like some... Here. All right. So Rav Kook is giving us a definition of absolute perfection. Right? So you have, over here, absolute perfection. And Rav Kook is telling us that when we understand absolute perfection, now before I even go on, I want to focus you on how very specific he is. He's saying, we understand. This is all about how it appears to us. Okay? It's not how it is. We don't know how it is. We can only understand how perfection or reality appears to us. Okay? That's why in the Kabbalah, it only talks about the Or Ein Sof, the endless light, but it doesn't really talk about the Ein Sof. Because that would mean that we are deluding ourselves to think that we could understand the Ein Sof. We can't understand the Ein Sof. We can, at best, hope to understand the manifestation of the Ein Sof, how the Ein Sof is revealed and appears to us, which is the light of the Ein Sof. Now, the truth is, scientists will say the same thing if they're honest. They won't say this is what an atom is or an electron is. They say this is how it appears to us. Because it's all relative to us, since we're in the equation, we're viewing it. We have to be honest to say that this is how it appears to us, relative to us. What it is on its own, we have no clue. Right? We can only understand how it is in relation to us, relative to us, and how we understand it. Okay? Now that goes back to the point I've made many times. This is not theology. We are not studying God. We are studying ourselves. But since we're a part of the greater whole, the greater one, the greater self, so we have to talk about Hashem. But not because we're trying to understand Him, but rather try to understand ourselves. Okay? This is about understanding ourselves. Okay? So we understand, and so this is how we understand it, and we have to be true to how we understand it, because that's the only understanding we have. We understand that absolute perfection has two values or two types of perfection. One we're going to call being perfect, and one we're going to call becoming perfect. Okay? One is static and never changing. And one is dynamic and ever-changing. Okay? Two types of perfection. Now, how many perfections actually are there? There's really only one perfection, but when we understand that one perfection, it appears to have two faces, two facets, two aspects, okay? Just like light, white light, when it's projected through a prism, then it appears to be multiple, But it's not. It's really just one white light. Okay? So too, we have to understand that Hashem is absolutely one, and there's only one absolute perfection, but when we understand this absolute perfection, it is understood in a paradoxical way. And it appears to us as having two facets, which are mutually exclusive. One is being perfect, already perfect, and one is not yet perfect, and that can become perfect. Okay? In other words, what the Arizal is, and Rav Kook is kind of touching on here, is the old question, can Hashem create a rock that he himself cannot pick up? Because if you say, no, Hashem can't create a rock that he himself cannot pick up, then you're going to say, well, then he's not unlimited. He's not perfect. Right? If you say, well, yes, he can create a rock that he himself cannot pick up, then you're going to say, well, then he's not unlimited. He's not perfect. So then what would the answer be to that question? Can God create a rock that he himself cannot pick up?
Yes or no. Created it and then he moves it.
He creates it and he moves it? Yes or no. It's yes or no. It's beyond the either or of the limited logic of the human brain, right? We assume that reality functions according to the laws of our logic. But who says? Who says? Right? In fact, quantum logic is now seriously challenging that very point, right? That either or in the world of quantum logic is completely acceptable, that there is a reality that's beyond either or. The question is light a wave or a particle? Because in certain experiments, it appears to be behaving as a wave. But in other experiments, it appears to be behaving as a particle. So which one is it? Is light a particle or is light a wave? These are mutually exclusive descriptions. And yet they are both being accurately proven to be so. So is light a wave or a particle? How many people here think it's both?
Schrodinger's cat dead.
What?
Schrodinger's cat dead or alive.
Okay. Let's not jump the gun here. Okay. So it's not both. Right? It's not a combination. It's neither. And yet it includes, when described by us, both. In other words, light isn't schizophrenic. It's not like, oh, wait, I get it. This is one of those particle experiments. I got to act like a particle. Oh, wait, they're now changing it to a wave. Oh, my gosh, I got to, you know. It doesn't have a split personality, light. Light is what it is, and yet when described by our dualistic minds, it becomes distilled and, so to speak, refracted in the prism of our dualistic minds into what we would describe as paradoxical, right? But light itself is neither a wave nor a particle. It's beyond the either or. And yet, when we encounter it in certain ways, it appears as a particle. In other ways, it appears to be a wave, but it's much more than both. Okay, so too, absolute perfection, when understood by us, when we take our dualistic, logical, classical Greek logical minds and try to understand absolute perfection, we end up coming up with a paradoxical formula. That paradox is, let's go back. We understand the absolute perfection, two values of perfection. One value of perfection, because of its greatness, completeness, has no relationship to increment. This perfection, being perfect, can't grow, can't advance, there can't be bracha, there can't be increase. It is what it is, and it can't become more than it is because it's absolutely perfect. What could it become more? Okay? However, if there is not a possibility of increment, this itself would be a deficiency. Are you telling me that the Ein Sof can't grow? The Ein Sof can't become? That's the question. Can perfect become more perfect? Going back to, can God create a rock that he himself cannot pick up? Here the question is, can the perfect become more perfect? Now, if you say no, then you're limiting the perfect, and you're saying that the perfect can't become more perfect. If you say, yes, the perfect can become more perfect, then you have another problem, which is what? Then it's not perfect. Well, so then what's the answer? Absolute perfection, when described by us, includes the possibility of the advantages of both, which is while being absolutely, totally, completely perfect includes the possibility of imperfect towards greater perfect. Okay? And so, why does that make no sense if there's not a possibility? Because the perfection that progresses and increases consistently has an extra transcendental pleasure. A certain height that we yearn for, to grow from power to power, and therefore the divine perfection could not miss this advantage of increment. Very strange logic. Because we love to grow, how could we rob God of the possibility of growing? What do you mean? What's it got to do with us? Right? But that goes back to something I explained once before. Not only is this not theology, this isn't even philosophy. Because philosophy asks the question why. And we're not asking any questions why. We're asking the question what. Science, this is a science. A science asks what is it, not why is it. What is it? Not why is water water, but what is water? Okay? And so this is actually a science. This is not a philosophy. This is a science. Now that we're here, right? And now that we are imperfect and we love to grow, how could that be missing from the Ein Sof? Right? Now, if we would have backed up and started from a theoretical point of view, this would be a different discussion. But we're not starting from the top down. We're starting from the bottom up. We're here. It's a done deal, right? We are imperfect beings living in an imperfect world, constantly trying to become more perfect. And so where did this come from, right? How does that jive with God's perfection? Why would a perfect being create an imperfect me and put me in an imperfect world and expect me to become more perfect? Well, the answer is Ein Od Milvado. The answer is there's nothing but HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's nothing but absolute perfection. There's nothing but absolute wholeness. Included within absolute perfection is the possibility for imperfection towards growing to greater perfection while remaining perfect. The light surrounds the vacuum. The light includes chaos. The light includes breakdown. The light includes a story of building and fixing. And yet the light still fills the vacuum. And something happened and didn't happen. That's what the Arizal said. Something happened and didn't happen. And our minds can't wrap ourselves around that. But again, this is not about philosophy, and this is not even about God. It's about you. Because what the Arizal has just done has given us an understanding of who we are and what on earth are we supposed to be doing here. There's nothing but a Kadosh Baruch Hu. There's nothing about the absolute perfection. But we understand that absolute perfection, while being perfect, includes the possibility of being imperfect and becoming perfect. Guess who we are? Which are we? Who are we? Are we perfect beings?
No.
Or are we imperfect beings who are becoming more perfect? That's who we are. Right? Ein Od Milvado, there's nothing but a Kadosh Baruch Hu. There's nothing but absolute perfection. Included within absolute perfection is the possibility for growth. And so while being perfect, the light fills the vacuum, there's the possibility of imperfection and a dynamic becoming. In other words, you're not even a human being. You're actually a human becoming. You are not beings, you are becomings. You cannot but want to grow, right? You love to grow. That's what the Gemara says. When you have $100, well, it doesn't say dollars, but whatever the currency, right? You want 200. You get 200, you want 400. And people think that it's just talking about money, but it's not true. You get one daf, you want two daf. You get one masechta, you want two masechta. You want more and more and more. Because that's who we are, right? Right? That's who you are. You are dynamic growth. You are dynamic becoming. And so why did Hashem create the world? There's no why. He just celebrates his possibilities of himself, right? The absolute perfect is expressing his possibilities. One of his possibilities is imperfection that can grow to greater perfection. So now, wow, what a paradigm shift, right? Because before I learned this piece, and I want you to know that if you're finding this a little difficult, then I found it impossible when I first heard it. It bothered me for at least 3 years. I went to a lot of different rabbis to talk to them about this. So you should just know that I'm not saying this because I happened to prepare this class yesterday. Literally, I struggled with this piece. This one piece, not only the other piece, 3 years at least. Went to all kinds of rabbis. Right? Because I always believe that there is a being called God somewhere in existence. Right? And he's perfect. And for some reason, ludicrous reason, he snapped his fingers and decided to create me. And here I am. And I don't understand, why would a perfect being create an imperfect me? And why would he put me in this imperfect world that's so full of challenges? It doesn't feel fair at all. Feels actually a little bit mean, you know? And I couldn't understand, right? Just couldn't understand. But God isn't in existence. He is existence and infinitely more. Hashem is absolute perfection, but absolute perfection when described by us, and we can only understand it as we understand it, but it's not the way it is, it's just the way it appears to us. Absolute perfection is described in a paradoxical way, including two values. One is a perfect being that's never changing, and the other is the possibility for an imperfect that's becoming perfect, which is ever changing. And now you understand who you are. Why are you an imperfect being in an imperfect world struggling to become more perfect? Because that's the part of God you play, right? That's the part of God you play. Now, for the monotheist, which I'm a monotheist, okay? For the monotheist, while God is the perfect being, we're the imperfect beings that are trying to get closer to the perfect being, right? And there's absolute duality. God and us, the perfect one, the imperfect ones, who are trying to become perfect. Very frustrating, because we know something is never going to happen. And what's that? We're never going to be perfect. So there's this carrot there, and Hashem's saying, come on, come closer to me. But it seems that every step I take towards the infinite perfect one is an infinite journey ahead of me. And I'm never, ever going to feel perfect. And that's really disturbing. And one could easily just despair and give up. Because I'm never going to be perfect. And yet this Torah is asking me to be perfect. Well, I want you to know something. Torah is not asking you to be perfect. It doesn't even want you to be perfect. What does it want you to do? Wants you to become, not even try. Don't try to be perfect. Just try to become a little more perfect. That's all. Today, you're a little better. Wow. That's so great. Today, you're a little more whole. Oh, fabulous. Kol kavod. You're never going to be completely whole. That's not your job. What's perfect about you is that you're an imperfect who can become more perfect. That's your perfection. Your perfection is dynamic, whereby imperfection is perfect for dynamic perfection, right? So now we have a whole different understanding. There's not some guy over there who snapped his fingers and here we are, the perfect being versus the imperfect beings who are trying to become like the perfect being and frustrated. But rather, ain't a mevado. There's nothing but the Kodesh Baruch Hu, right? Relative to us, we understand God as the perfect. And we're the humans that are imperfect trying to become perfect. But the truth is that ain't a mevado. There's nothing but the Kodesh Baruch Hu. We're the imperfect side of perfection that can become more perfect. And that's what's perfect about you. Now, are you perfect or not? You are perfect, but you're a different kind of perfect. You're the dynamic perfect, right? What's perfect about you is that you're imperfect. Your imperfections is what makes you perfectly a dynamic becoming. So therefore, don't feel bad. There's two kinds of perfection. We've said that before. There's two kinds of perfection. One is a being perfection. One is a becoming perfection. The becoming perfection includes imperfection, and imperfection is now perfect, right? Because it's part of growing. Now, if you don't grow, then you are not doing your job. You're not only betraying God, you're betraying yourself. Because that's what you do. You grow. That's what you do. You grow, right? You have to get a little more whole. A little more whole. And so that's why Rav Kook ends off and he says, right, therefore there is to divinity the ability to create a knowing actualization of worlds that continues in the full value and ascends, and therefore the divine soul to existence that gives it life is the consistent power to ascend. The soul of existence is that which tells you to grow. It says, lech lecha, keep going, keep moving, right? Take another step to greater wholeness. And therefore, I started this off with the pasuk, Kedoshim tiyu, ki ani kedosh. You shall become whole, because I am already whole. Ah, so Hashem is already whole, so he doesn't need us to be whole, because he's already whole. What does he need from us? To become whole. And he doesn't need that from us, because there isn't him and us. We're the part that needs to become whole. Okay? And so then he ends off with saying, to the extent that science progresses and establishes itself upon the principle of evolution, it progresses and comes closer to the clearest divine light, the highest vision. Evolution, yes, a vision of a world that's always evolving. Yeah, it's an evolving world, right? And that's what's so beautiful about it. We don't have a need to believe that every day was a pop. And God said, let there be light, pop. And then God said, let there be water, pop. Right? We're fine with this flow because we love the flow. It's the flow that is so beautiful, right? It's the flow that's so perfect. So the fact that the universe could be an evolving universe, right, doesn't diminish the godliness of it. The problem with evolution is that people use the doctrine to substitute God. But Darwin talks about God in his own doctrine. He wasn't trying to supplant God. He was trying to remove God. He was just trying to describe the hand of God. He did not believe in God. So suddenly people are using evolution as the option, right? As the reason not to believe in God. Well, I have no problems, right? Believing that we are an evolving process, an ever-growing process. Okay? But that's who we are. So, Einol Mevadel, there's nothing but HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is absolute goodness, absolute perfection, absolute wholeness. Included within absolute goodness is the possibility to choose goodness. Included within the absolute wholeness is the possibility for non-whole, which can become whole, which is a dynamic kind of wholeness. And that's what you're here to do. You're here to grow. And that's what I think is so amazing about a Torah life. And that's why I'm committed to the Jewish people, because this is a community that's committed to growth. That's what we're about. We're the cutting edge of civilization, right? We were. I don't know if we still are. I think we still are. But We were all about growing, questioning, challenging. Take it to another level. Make it better. Do it better. That's what it's about. Right? And so that's what Torah literally means. Torah not only means to instruct, it also means to enlighten from the word or. So Torah is enlightenment, but it also means to shoot. Lirot means to shoot. Torah is a way of light that propels us always forward. Always forward. So let's hear some questions, because there was a lot there. And I hope after my 3 years of struggling with it and teaching this for 25 years, you will now be able to understand it much less time. Yeah, Ben.
Being that God is infinite in his holiness, we are trying to attain holiness and perfection.
No. We're not trying to attain holiness and perfection. We're trying to just become a little more holy.
Right.
We're never going to be
perfect.
We're going to be perfectly imperfectly growing. That's our kind of perfection.
Right.
So, yes.
Meaning it's not even possible to attain perfection because in a way, if I'm correct,
You can attain your kind of perfection.
No,
it's just a different kind.
No.
You seem to think you think there's some kind of secondary perfection. There isn't a secondary perfection.
No.
You think there's an actual perfection and then yours, which isn't really quite actual. No, yours is very actual. You are actually a perfect, imperfect, dynamic entity. That's what's perfect about you. If you grow, right? Ben, if you keep growing, then you will be embodying the kind of perfection you are a manifestation of. If you don't grow, well, then you're really not perfect. Right? Then you're really not perfect. But the kind of perfection that you should aspire to is a perfect, dynamic adventure of constantly growing and becoming more loving, more caring, more truthful, more peaceful. No end. Ein Sof. No end to this journey. This journey is never going to end. You see, this is another thing you need to understand about the secret to happiness. The secret to happiness, the way to happiness is to be happy on the way. And that's the mistake people make. People think that someday they're going to be happy. Well, I want you to know you're never going to be happy, right? Because you're never going to be. You're always going to become, right? And so happiness is a journey, and you've got to learn to enjoy the journey. But most people think that when I become a doctor, when I will be a doctor, I'll be happy. And for some reason, you get to the day that you are a doctor and you're still not happy. Why? Because you've decided that you want to specialize in orthopedics or whatever, orthopedics, I don't know what, right? And then you finally become, a foot doctor, and then you decide, no, I want to be a toe specialist. Love to grow. Just know that about yourself, right? But if you think there's some magical moment in the future where then you're going to finally be happy, you won't, because you'll always want more. So then how can a person ever be happy? By enjoying the journey, right? And knowing that I'm just enjoying the fact that I'm growing, right? I'm not there yet, but I never will be there. My there is here and now that I'm growing. So that's what we are. We're human becomings. We're not beings. Yeah, Moshe.
So let's go back to the quantum logic. If a lot of other people understand it, then we can start going after. The idea, if God is dynamic, that means that he's improving constantly, wouldn't that imply that a previous God, and I guess I'm bringing like a linear sense of time,
No. You see, you're trying to be a theologian. I don't believe in theology, right? I'm not trying to understand God. You and I are here, and I can assure you that I'm imperfect, and I bet you are too. And I bet you everybody else in this room is also. And we're in a world that is very complicated, very challenging. Life is difficult. And the question is, why would a perfect God create an imperfect me in an imperfect world? And how does that jive with Jorah telling me, ain old mavado? And that's what we're trying to stand. We're not trying to stand God. You're trying to go from the top down, and it's too late. We're here, And we're struggling, and we're trying to make sense of our sense that we make sense.
My basic question is, is God dynamic or static?
I don't know. You keep talking about God. I don't know. I don't understand God. I can only understand myself in relationship to God. God is absolute perfect. When we describe absolute perfect with the kinds of minds that we have, which is limited, then the absolute perfect appears to us as having two types of perfection, a being perfect and a becoming perfect. We assume that the being perfect is God, the becoming perfect is us, but the truth is there's nothing but God, and we are a facet of God's truth as he just expresses his absolute perfection. Yeah.
I'm not sure if I got this correct, but did you say before that you're perfect if you grow, but you're not perfect if you don't grow?
Yes. You are a perfect journey. So that's what you are. And so if you're not journeying, if you're not growing, then you're failing.
But aren't you perfect because you are?
No. Your job, to be true to yourself, to be true to the kind of perfection that you manifest, you need to be growing. You need to become more. Right? Never settle. Be more. Right? Be more loving. You can always be more loving. That's the great thing about love. There will never come a time that you wake up and you look at your wife and say, you know, honey, I think we did it. Yeah, you love me and I love you. Now what do we do? Right? Thank God. You will never arrive at love because it's an endless journey. Right? And so enjoy the journey. But it's a journey. You got to keep moving. Don't be here now. Become here now.
But aren't many failures put together sometimes end up to...
Oh, well, then that was okay. That's good. That's great. So then if you take your failures and they catapult you in growth, then you've just recycled all that and all your failures are part of your success. If they do, but what if they don't? And what if you don't learn from your mistakes? You see, the fact that Adam made a mistake wasn't his biggest mistake. His biggest mistake is he wasn't willing to own up to mistake and grow from it. So that's it. Yeah, you can make mistakes, right? As long as you're going to always seek to learn from mistakes. And then you'll understand that you never fail. You just get results that you can learn how to do it better.
So
you'll never be a failure with this teaching.
Wouldn't you be perfect until you die? Because then only at your death do you know you never took your failures and brought it to success.
Well, let's hope you don't do that. But thank God you're at a Raita. And you're learning that a Torah life is a life that creates a context for constant growth. Right? And that's what we're here to do. We're here to grow, become more whole, love more, be kinder, be more truthful, be more honest. Just keep growing and, you know, don't get frustrated. One last point. You see, imagine a guy, he's climbing up a mountain. And his friend comes by in a helicopter and he says, what are you doing? What are your goals? And he says, well, my goal is the top of this mountain. So the friend says, well, how long have you been climbing? He says, well, it's been actually 2 weeks. How much longer do you have? I got another 3 weeks. Well, get in my helicopter. I'll take you up there. I could get you up there in like an hour. Would he do it? If he doesn't, then he lied. He said the top of the mountain was his goal. It wasn't his goal. His goal was every step of the climb. If you want to be happy, then enjoy every step of the climb. Okay? And so you have to have a top to your mountain, because then there isn't a climb. And you want to get to that top. But just understand that the top was the means. Right? The goal was the climb. So that's it for today. And so give me this back.